This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. And very sad news to kick us off on this week's episode with the passing of John Sillett, one of Coventry City's 1987 FA Cup winning managers who left us at the age of 85. He was at the helm between 1986 and 1990, including when they beat Spurs to win their first major trophy alongside joint manager George Curtis, who sadly died earlier this year. He also played for the club, who described him as an icon. One report said simply, John Sillett woven into the history of Coventry City. It's the official EFL podcast. We'll get the EFL's reaction to the government's fan-led review when we speak to Chairman Rick Parry a bit later on this week's official EFL podcast. But first, what a contrast between this Sky Bet Championship season and the last one for the Reading manager, Veljko Paunovic. You might remember the club's previous campaign began with 7 wins from their first 8 games. This time around, though, injuries to key players, personal absence through COVID, and a 6-point deduction for breaches of the league's profit and sustainability rules means the club are hovering just above the relegation zone. But after last weekend's win at Resurgence Swansea City, the man himself said, "We have made a statement. They're never going to give up. They're always going to fight." In the end, Veljko, do you use that reverse psychology, that kind of adversity to motivate the troops? Is it a very open dialogue along those lines?
Yeah, it is. We are very transparent in what's going on around us. And since last year, we forged a spirit and mentality of never giving up, as you said, and embracing all the adversities that we have to deal with. And that being that our common conversation and being dealing with that since the first day we got here, there's nothing new except reminding the people what we are made of and why we are here at first place is to play football. We are all professionals, and on the other side, we want to have a legacy. And our club is celebrating this year 150 years, and we know that that history reminds us of a lot of setbacks, a lot of successes and failures. And now we are put in a situation where nobody's guilty for what happened to the club, or nobody is directly responsible for the points deduction and embargo that we have to go through. But we are all responsible how we want our time with the club to be remembered. And knowing that and saying that openly, I think, helps everyone to align and to use the current situation as a catalyst for our team to perform and to shape a culture that will definitely be good for everyone moving forward.
I mean, there was this uncertainty hanging over the club before the announcement. Does knowing what the penalty is now really allow you to dig your heels firmly in the ground and move forward?
It is a relief, because there was a lot of a dark cloud talking in the background, and rumors and things lingering within the environment, within the community, and obviously our fans and our club. So now that everything is out, I think it's a relief, and it just clears the air and clears the path moving forward. We know exactly what we have to do now, and we focused ourselves on the things that we control. And I think it's our performances, our responses to the difficulties. And they're not only difficulties off the field, but on the field. And those are that we can control. And I think in the first week after the new situation, we had a clear goal, which is to win a game. And we needed as soon as possible. And fortunately or unfortunately, we won our third game this week. That was crucial for our team, because we knew that we will be judged, and we will be the people, the expectations will be how the team is going to respond. And we needed that response to be positive. And the response, I think, was very positive at the end in the game against Swansea. Not because we won the 3 points, not because we showed a different face, because we were capable of coming back quickly from when they scored, and they scored both times at the beginning of the first and second half. And that's something that didn't happen in the past. But most important for me is the way we celebrated. I think we celebrated. We all aligned. We all showed that we are going in the same direction with the goal. If you remember the second goal after Andy Carroll scored and rode the team in the winning direction.
What have you learned about yourself over the first 4 months of the season? I mentioned that list at the start. You added the embargo to the list. What have you learned about yourself as a result of the challenges you've been through professionally and also personally? Because obviously COVID, missing a couple of games you missed, Velko, earlier in the season? Yeah. What have you learned about yourself?
Yeah, two games, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a great question. I didn't have a lot of time to reflect on that, but my first thought is I'm more patient than I even thought that I am. I think having to wait until further in the season to complete your team, and then seeing players losing and still having to wait for them to recover, and still waiting on them to recover, many of them, still shows the resilience and the patience that we all have here, and myself included.
The other thing that really intrigues me this season, Velko, is 8 wins, 3 came in successive games. I mean, form always fascinates me, how you can have bad form and then suddenly go on a good run and then drift back out of it again. What was that all about?
Yeah, I think the start, how the preseason started, and all these things that we mentioned already affected and the consistency or the inconsistency we have this season. And I think also what contributes to that is the small squad and not being able to rotate and rest players. Every time we had a run of 3 games with a midweek in the middle, we struggled. We struggled whether that week or the next week, whenever that accumulation was difficult to cope with. And then automatically it hurts the confidence of the team and the overall performances. But we bounce back every time we get that extra time to recover and to reset, which I believe now that our schedule at least looks much more regular until February, I believe we will recover our consistency and we will build a new momentum. 2 times we were close to build it, and I think the third time it must be the one when we will finally succeed.
I was going to ask you about how the reality of managing in England compares to the dream, but obviously the amount of games we play is one key factor, isn't it? And you've just alluded there to the fact there are no midweek games for a while. And that must be such a relief, because you can actually do some work during the week on the training field and not just be putting out fires and making sure everybody's rested.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I don't want... I know the people may think that during FIFA breaks, you're capable of doing something extra. You're not, because we have 4, 5, 6 international players who are away, and then you also need to rest players who had more fatigue or accumulation due to all these reasons. But the experience is great for me. I'm learning so much, and I want to learn more. I must say that I prefer everything to be thrown on me so I can learn, I can figure out, and I can solve situations. And I'm also very grateful for the people who I have around and I work with, and to the players, because they understand also how difficult, or I don't want to say difficult, but how much how many things we have to deal with, and we always give our best, and we always find ways to carry on.
Yeah. I mean, in a perverse sort of way, going forward in your career, might I suggest this period of adversity will be a major plus. It doesn't feel it now when you're dealing with everything, but you'll know you can get through periods in your management career like this.
I think you phrased it perfectly. Just what I wanted to explain, what I had on my mind. This is a huge leverage. It's a, not only leverage, it's an experience that I will rely during all my coaching career. And not only that, my personal also experience is fantastic. So yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Do you know, sometimes in life, and it's probably a lesson for anybody listening, having been through a difficult couple of years, people that are struggling with their mental health at the moment, people that are struggling with adversity, it's just sometimes, to use a boxing phrase, our turn to be on the ropes, Velko, isn't it? It just...
Exactly.
Sometimes it comes out of nowhere, and sometimes we've just got to deal with a different set of challenges. A couple of final questions. It's quite notable, Danny Drinkwater, Andy Carroll. Danny Drinkwater's helped you for about the last dozen games. Obviously, Andy Carroll got his first goal at the weekend. That feels like a slight change of recruitment strategy for the club. Would that be right?
Well, yes. How I'm going to explain this. What we need, and I think every team needs, is the right structure within the players, the young players, the players, performers, and veteran players. Basically, you need to have your black belts, your red belts, and your yellow belts aligned and in a right amount. And I think we lacked of black belts. I think that's where we focused to improve this year. And with all of them, Danny Drinkwater, Scott, Dan, and Andy Carroll, they're all black belts that we needed to have in a team, and they're still in their prime. I believe they're performing very good for the team. They're also enjoying here. You have to see how good mentors are they for all of our young players and those who are maybe still getting their experience in this difficult league. So I think aligning the structure of the team is very important. And that's how, as you said, it's not a tweak in our strategy. I think it's just a natural progression towards building a pyramid, successful pyramid of a team.
Velko, it's been an absolute pleasure. Just before you go, do you mind if I just pick your brains as a pundit? Because there's a huge game coming up this weekend. It's the top two, Fulham against Bournemouth. You've beaten Fulham this season. You lost to Bournemouth. Do you mind if I just pick your brains and say, I mean, are they head and shoulders above the rest of the division this season? You know, which is likely to come out as champions? Can you share with us?
Well, I think it's going to be a very interesting fight between two of them. And I don't exclude that someone else will get in the battle for the first two places at some point, because we all know, even though that they're flying Fulham and Bournemouth right now, we all know how difficult is this league and how difficult it becomes in the second part of the season. So right now, from what we've seen, it's difficult to pick which one of them will be the champion, if so. I think they are definitely the best two teams with the way they play, the way they handle themselves, and what they've shown so far. So it's going to be an interesting game, but I'm not ready to give you an opinion about, because first of all, I don't want to give up on our dream. So we will see.
I've been really inspired talking to you. Congratulations getting through such a challenging period. I know there's a long way still to go, but maybe it's nice just occasionally to say to a manager, well done, because what you've dealt with this season has been considerable. Great to talk to you, Velko.
Thank you, Clem. Always my pleasure talking to you too. Thank you for having me.
Elsewhere in the Sky Bet Championship, it's a winning start for the new Sheffield United manager, Paul Heckingbottom, appointed on a 4.5-year contract after Slavisa Jokanović was sacked after just 6 months in the job. Since losing 7-0 at home to Fulham, Blackburn Rovers have now taken 10 points from a possible 12, and having won only two of their first 16 games, Hull City have now won 4 in a row.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
In April of this year, an independent review of the English football system was announced by the then Culture Secretary, Oliver Dowden, with the aim of exploring ways of improving governance, ownership and the financial sustainability of clubs within the football pyramid. That was to safeguard the future of professional football in this country for generations to come. The 162-page report, led by Conservative MP Tracy Crouch, was published last week, makes a number of suggestions for significant changes to the business of football in this country. To discuss these proposals and the significance of the review as a whole, we can talk to EFL Chairman Rick Parry. When this landed last week, Rick, you were very positive on some of its contents. The dust has obviously settled. You've had time to digest it, the 47 recommendations. What are your thoughts now? You've had a bit of time for it to swirl around your head.
We're still positive, Clem. And I think our position is we want to engage constructively in the process. Do I think we need an independent regulator? No. Genuinely think the EFL is capable of governing itself, has introduced a lot of positive changes over recent years. But listen, we're totally in favour of better regulation. So we have no quarrels on that. We think it's a very thorough, very professional report. Clearly, we like its thoughts on redistribution. Our passion is about making clubs throughout the pyramid sustainable, top to bottom. And what we would say is you can't have regulation without redistribution and vice versa. We need redistribution to make all the clubs solvent and regulation to make them sustainable. So there's much in the report that we agree with. There's some detail that we don't. But as I said, we want to engage constructively. And this is all about really the fundamental point for everybody is, does the pyramid matter? Because if it does, we have to embrace change.
Yeah. I mean, I know that obviously sustainability and redistribution are sort of central to what your arguments have been for the past 18 months. Can we just finish off, though, on the idea of this regulator? I guess looking at it dispassionately, what does it say about the state of the game that is one of the recommendations?
Well, I think it says we're not demonstrating a great deal of unity, as we've probably seen within the last week. That there are probably too many vested interests. And again, you know, the interesting thing here is we are completely in favour of transparency. We are completely in favour of independence. And we have no issues in terms of the thrust of many of the recommendations. We do think some are too strong. It's really important that we don't do anything that's going to discourage the really good owners, and we have a lot of really, really good owners in the EFL. But, you know, Tracy's done her homework. She's been really thorough. She's come up with a view that we need independence. We respect her position. And as I said, for us, it's about engagement and in really making sure that what we're doing dovetails with what government are doing. It's not a turf war. It's all about better regulation, better distribution, and absolutely about improving the health of the whole pyramid.
Yeah. To that end, I suppose some of the 47 recommendations are going to suit you, your interests, your club's interests, ditto the Premier League, ditto supporters, ditto the Football Association, etc. I mentioned central to most conversations we've had, you've had over the past 18 months, has been this subject of redistribution of money throughout the pyramid to make the pyramid sustainable. Does the review so far go far enough from your point of view, Rick?
Listen, we'd have loved it to have gone further. We'd have loved it to have been specific, but it went further than the interim recommendations. It does acknowledge the need for a rethink. which is really positive. And it recommends that in the absence of the game being able to sort it out, that the regulator be given those powers. So in that sense, it's positive. Are we in a better position than we were last week? Yes, I'd say very much we are. But the thing I'd really like to emphasize on that is we're not looking for handouts. We're not there with a begging bowl. We genuinely believe that a rethink is better for the pyramid as a whole. It's better for those clubs in the Premier League facing relegation. It's better for our clubs aspiring to promotion. And it's better for the clubs lower down the pyramid. It is a complete solution. And what we'd also say is the Premier League knows that there's a problem. It recognises that there's a problem. It recognises that the cliff edge is almost unbridgeable. But its solution is flawed. And, you know, frankly, the clue is in the name. You don't need a parachute to fall off a step. You need a parachute when there's a big drop and the drop is too big. But we need a better solution than a rethink.
Is one of your challenges that it's a bit like, and we are, as we record this just into December, turkeys voting for Christmas, in so much as people see what's at the end of their own nose and not what might be on the horizon 5 years down the line. I'm talking about, obviously, getting buy-in from the clubs within the Premier League right now to cover a situation that might affect them further down the line.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. And we haven't got very far in the last 18 months. But, you know, when we look statistically, you look at the health of the pyramid. Great that Brentford, as the 50th club going up, have done so well. You look at the EFL last year, 16 clubs in the Championship with Premier League experience, 10 in League One, 3 in League Two. What we would say is the Premier League, from a commercial standpoint, this isn't a charitable point, but from a commercial standpoint, needs a healthy turnover of clubs. It needs a vibrant relegation battle. It needs variety down at the bottom. This just makes sound commercial sense. As you said, those currently there will be resistant, but looking at the statistics, other than the very biggest clubs, chances are many of the 14 non-top six, and I say top six rather than big six, will be relegated in the years to come. And I think if they take a 10-year view, this is a better system. It can't be right that you have, well, it's certainly a fairer system. I think that's inarguable. Clearly, parachute payments that place them at a considerable advantage and help to get back up, I guess, are preferable from a self-interest point of view. But taking a dispassionate view, which is what Tracy's done, and frankly, which is what the regulator will do, we think that better distribution creates fairer competition and overall will be a much better solution.
I know you have regular dialogue with the other stakeholders. Have you had a meeting with the Premier League since the review findings were announced? Have you had your sort of weekly meeting yet? Have you had any dialogue with the Premier League since?
I haven't, but EFL executives talk with the Premier League all the time. And relations, you know, to be honest, have always been cordial, professional, and nobody respects the Premier League and admires the Premier League more than I do. We're not anti-Premier League in any way, shape or form. We want the Premier League to be the preeminent competition in Europe. Of course we do, and I'm sure there will be, you know, sure there will be constructive dialogue in the weeks to come.
Yeah, and I guess I just asked the question because, you know, obviously your hand has been strengthened by this outside perspective, and obviously I guess that gives you extra negotiating fulcrum when you are sitting down and saying, okay, come on, somebody else has acknowledged what we've been talking about for the past 18 months. Are you absolutely confident that if you got this redistribution, if the parachute payments were ended, it would end the Championship gamble that has obviously been so costly and damaging for some clubs?
That's where regulation has to come hand in hand. And we're totally in favour of better regulation. There's no point in just redistributing more cash and wasting it. We talked about the numbers in the Championship. They are pretty horrifying, with clubs spending 120% of their income on wages, with 500 million of losses. That has to stop. It's neither profitable nor sustainable. We would say that parachute payments are a root cause. Because at the end of the day, a club in receipt of a Bjørn parachute is pretty much 40 million better off than a club in receipt of Premier League solidarity. That is unbridgeable. That, we would say, is what leads to the irrational behaviour in the Championship. So if we can have fairer distributions, a fairer competition, that irrational behaviour should stop. But it won't stop without regulation. We've been looking at improving cost control for years. You know, we did introduce salary caps within the League One and Leagues Two. We lost the challenge to the PFA. We were on the way. We have very constructive discussions about introducing them at Championship level. There isn't a resistance on the part of clubs to change and to doing things better. And as I said, from our point of view, look forward to dialogue with government. And in particular, looking at the boundaries of who does what. What does the regulator do? What do we do as regards competition rules? But all with a view to making life better and making clubs sustainable. That is the focus. This is all about making clubs sustainable. It's not turf wars. It's not a fight over who does what. It's all working together. And I think we have a fantastic opportunity, one-off opportunity perhaps now to really think constructively and look at the health of the game for the next 25 years.
I mean, another recommendation was to look at the owners and directors test. This has obviously been a source of major criticism over the years. I mean, you'd welcome that, presumably. This might finally nail the problem the EFL and others have faced.
Well, we would say we've responded to the weaknesses in the Berry case. That couldn't happen again. We've been robust in the last year or two in terms of turning down some applications. And the key change we brought about post-Berry was to ensure that owners had to demonstrate they have the financial wherewithal before they actually buy the club. That was the weakness of the previous rules. That has closed a massive loophole. Owners and directors test, we would say, is working well. But again, can it be improved? Of course it can be improved. But it's frankly not bad at the moment. But again, if you look across the package of Tracy's recommendations, there's some sensible stuff in there, club licensing, solvency tests, looking carefully at owner contributions, all perfectly sensible stuff. Don't have an issue, frankly, with any of that. So as I said, overall, great opportunity. Put aside the differences. Let's all work together for the common good of the pyramid. And again, back to that fundamental objective of making every club sustainable.
Just finally, Rick, what do you say to those that say, well, wait a second, why don't we just leave the Premier League to sort themselves out? Why don't you sort yourselves out? The Premier League have already, you know, invested heavily in the EFL. How do you respond to that?
Because the gap's too big and we haven't been able to resolve it. You know, it's interesting that if we look back a few years, if we look back 10 years, of course there was a marked gap between the income of the EFL and the income of the Premier League, but it's widened massively. You know, 10 years ago, the gap in income was 1.4 billion. Which is pretty large. 10 years on, 2018-19, it's 4 billion. It's gone up threefold in 10 years. That is something where you have to pause and say, hang on, this now needs to be reviewed because, you know, otherwise the gap will just get wider and wider and wider and the challenge will become harder and harder. So, you know, now is the time, we hope, for a constructive rethink. But again, you know, our argument is it's not about benefiting the EFL. It's not the EFL versus the Premier League. It is about a better solution for every club, whether they're falling downwards or rising upwards.
Keep fighting, Rick. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Well, listening to Rick Parry was the owner of Accrington Stanley, Andy Hull. As the owner of a club very much in the middle of the EFL pyramid, Andy, I mean, what's your reaction to last week's report?
I mean, I think it's a long overdue report. I've been really critical at EFL for not addressing this for a long time. These are real issues, and you know, the key issue is the way the formula works that makes this problem, you know, get worse over time rather than better. And until we address that, there's no hope. So it's great to see that we have had a review, and it's a pity that it took, you know, Premier League to blow itself up with the ESL to create that review, because it's been needed for a long time. But we have it now, and it's great to see EFL under the leadership of Rick. I've got to say, he's done a great job of finally taking seriously the real issues, and rather than just keep rolling over and saying there's nothing we can do about it, which is what's happened in the past.
Do you think there's been too much focus on the impact on the Premier League, Andy, rather than the benefits for somebody that's eking out a tough existence in League One as you are?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of comment either way. I mean, I've seen a lot of comments from Premier League since the review, and you know, I find them laughable. When you know, Karen Brady telling us that we ought to learn to manage our finances better is a bit rich when they're not managing them right up there. They're all in losses up there, getting 100 million apiece. So we need to kind of separate all that. We need to be asking why we need an independent regulator, kind of, and the distribution separate, because what's happening with distribution? If you worked for me as a director, and I had a cleaner earning £10,000 a year, and you were earning £100,000 a year, if I give you 10% rise and the cleaner 10% rise, you'd effectively get a rise equal to a salary. I like these analogies because it makes it easier for people to understand. Mm. So you'd be getting a £10,000 wage, which is equal to a salary. So these formula, kind of the better a company does. And if you start applying equal rises across the board, it isn't long before those at bottom can't feed themselves and those at top are awash with cash. So you've got to keep resetting the bar to keep the gap a lot closer. You can't have, you know, otherwise you'd have a director on 100 million and a cleaner on 15 grand after, you know, 20 years. And these formulas are doing that all the time. It's, you know, the more success the Premier League has, the bigger disadvantage, the bigger the gap, just like it would be between a director and a cleaner, to use that analogy. So it's kind of like we're victims of his own success. There is nowhere to go to address that. There hasn't been anywhere to go for years. And it's not anti-Premier League. This is not a Premier League, EFL, National League, FA issue. The question is, who's responsible for the pyramid? You know, a pyramid that I own a club within. Who's responsible for the health of that pyramid? Is it the FA? Is it the EFL? Is it the Premier League? Is it the National League? And the truth is, nobody's responsible for it. And as in all walks of life, he who pays the piper calls the tune. So the Premier League paying the piper calls the tune. And yeah, I understand why they're reluctant to do anything about it, because they're hanging on to shirt tails of clubs higher up. They're desperate not to get relegated. So we all have individual issues as clubs. Accrington has issues, just like Burnley have issues, just like Crystal Palace have issues, and even Karen Brady, who thinks we're Oliver Twist for trying to address these issues. She has her own issues. So you've got to be able to go to somebody and say, look, this is the way the story is going. We want you to review it and tell us whether this is the right way it should go. Now, that is, from a Premier League point of view, if they want B teams, they should be able to go to a regulator. They shouldn't be saying, if you don't give us B teams, we're taking our finance away. They should be able to go and approach somebody that governs game can give them a fair solution, taking into account the effects on the rest of the game. And it's same with financing, it's same with everything. So the absence of a regulator, well, there's been one. You know, when COVID happened, the regulator became the government. It wasn't the Premier League. They didn't want to pay out the dues. They hang on, hung on, and we ended up being lost the championship and all the rest, for fair reasons. I'm not arguing about the reasons, but it was the government that made things happen. With ESL, this European Super League, it were the fans that made the change happen. Now, what we need is somebody that's doing that all the time, that's looking at the overall pyramid and deciding that what is right, taking into account everybody else within that structure right down to grassroots.
In a nutshell, Andy, are you slightly more optimistic than you were a week ago? before you read through the 47 recommendations of this independent review?
I'm extremely optimistic. I spent an hour talking to Tracy Crouch and the group. I know that the nation as a whole wants a pyramid that works for everybody, not just for the few. I think Tracy Crouch gets the issues properly. I also think it's the last chance saloon, because we're seeing clubs get into distress more and more. We're in a situation where clubs are suing each other now, or threatening to sue each other. And it's falling into disrepute, and we just can't go on like this. We need a financial reset because the formula is working against us. Now, an independent regulator will be aware of all the issues in the Premier League, with modern half of Premier League issues. They'll also be aware of top of championships issues, and they make a reasonable judgment, because their job's to protect the pyramid, not any individual club. Now, for me, I want an equitable standard that's here when I'm gone, otherwise I've wasted my time doing it. So, I don't want to be in football forever. So I want it to go in, and then the next person that comes in doesn't sell the stadium off that we've paid for and built and risk it trying to get up to championship or to do something silly. I want to get it so there's regulations that protects what we've done as a team at Accrington Stanley. We've worked really hard to get to where we are. You can't have another owner just coming in and blowing it all because the rules say you can. So we need decent regulations because it matters. It matters to our town. It matters to kids. It matters to, I went to Chippy. And it can't thank me enough, because his business is solvent now, because we're bringing good teams to Accrington. And against Sheffield Wednesday, it's all out by 10-3. He didn't have any change. He didn't have a can of Coke or a single chip left. He had to shut shop. So it matters from a town point of view. Going back to Bury, it's really important. And I'm saying we have to protect that. And Premier League is saying we understand the problem, we should sort it. Which is where Big Picture come from. They're the only ones you could talk to. But you can also say that they're not the ones that are going to be in that bottom needing a parachute, so it's easy for them to say. But I mean, we just need to get together. Football belongs to everybody. It belongs to every fan in country. It belongs to every man, woman and child in country. And we have to be able to take pride in it.
Well said, Andy. I hope you find what you're looking for. Thanks for joining us.
Take it easy. Look after yourself. Thank you.
Your headlines in Sky Bet League One over the past week. Having gone 16 matches since the opening day without defeat, deposed leaders Plymouth Argyle have now lost three in a row. It's now four consecutive league wins for Portsmouth, who are just 2 points off the playoffs. They've actually won six in a row in all competitions. And a fifth win of the season for Shrewsbury Town signalled a first defeat in charge of Charlton Athletic for Johnny Jackson. Into League Two, where Hartlepool United have appointed Graham Lee as their new manager to succeed Dave Challoner. He made 225 appearances as a player for the club before joining Sheffield Wednesday in 2003. He's left his position as Middlesbrough's under-23s coach to take over. Stevenage, meanwhile, have appointed the former Exeter City and MK Dons manager Paul Tisdale to replace Alex Ravel. No game for Stevenage last weekend, though. Their match was postponed as Storm Arwen took its toll on Tranmere Rovers Prenton Park. That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Andy Holt, to Rick Parry and to Velko Paunovic. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name is Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.